Hello, and welcome to the Simon and Joe Film Show.
There are flakes of snow in the air, Simon. It's bloody cold.
It is bloody cold. In England, it's snowing like, you know, a demon. And therefore...
And it's not really that bad. I just think the English can't really cope with it, Simon. That's the point we're making.
We're coping with it because we're in it. We're walking in it. And
we're
listening to it in your ears.
Yes, you're listening to the snow in your ears right now. What are we going to be talking about this week, Simon?
Okay, well, we covered the Brighton Film Festival briefly last week when we watched Beautiful. Yeah. But we're going to continue with that this week as Joe has seen Patagonia and...
Fleurs du Mal, which is a French-Iranian film, translates as Flowers of Evil, and about the Iranian election that was somewhat controversial.
And my Potathon continues with the last two before I see the seventh one next week, which is
Order of the Phoenix and the Half-Blood Prince. 5 and 6, that's what we're saying, yeah?
God, yeah. Yes, I did watch them. Okay. That sounds like I didn't watch them. I did watch them. That wasn't a lie.
No, okay. And, of course, we've got the news, which includes the tragic news this week that legendary funny man Leslie Nielsen has died.
Indeed.
We'll be covering that in more depth and plenty more besides.
Exactly. So, next up, anyway, is the Brighton Film Festival Part 2. Okay, so it's our main review section. Now, it's going to be a little bit different this time because we're covering films at the Brighton Film Festival as Joe has managed to see Deux. That means two in French.
Well, we saw Beautiful together last week.
Yeah.
In the Ratu film, and we covered that last week. But I have seen another two, keeping the international flavour up. And the first one I saw was Fleurs du Mal.
Flowers of Evil would be the translation.
That is its translation. It is a French film. About Iran,
really?
Funnily enough. Essentially, this Iranian woman comes to Paris and meets this French boy. She is fleeing her country. There has been an election and now there are riots. And she is fleeing. She is using Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that to keep up to date with it. But she embarks on this tentative romance with this French guy who is a free runner / dancer / bit of an oddball, but a fun chap. And he takes her to see the sights, and they tentatively take the first steps into, you know, a relationship. And at the same time, she is coming to terms. And again, like I said, there's social networking stuff going on here. On YouTube, she's coming to terms with what's going on in Iran, and there's lots of footage, actual footage, in amongst this fiction film of the riots, people getting beaten up. It's not good quality footage because it's off YouTube and stuff, but it's very clear what is happening, and, you know, and at the same time, that is impacting on their relationship in Paris, as they, you know, as they are occasionally angry with each other and occasionally nice to each other. It's a really interesting dichotomy between the two places and the way that the reality and the fiction, the way in which they impact upon each other.
Okay, so would you say then, with all these, like, social networking things which is involved in the film, is quite contemporary? Is that one of its strengths?
It is very contemporary. It puts text on the screen when people are on Facebook or Twitter, and, you know, it uses these things to demonstrate what... I mean, you know, this is a very new film. There's the election in Iran was just last year, so already there's this reaction to it from this French film company using a kind of an Iranian-French, you know, love affair to illustrate a really serious documentary point, essentially. So in that sense, you know, it's real, it's right in the heart of it. But also, it's a love story. So, you know, and it's a complex love story because they get along, they don't get along. It's kind of weird in that sense. And it feels quite real and raw, the relationship, because it's a bit peculiar.
Okay, I mean, the tagline, what is it? A love story steeped in internet and tangled up in history. Would that be accurate then?
Yeah, it's certainly steeped in internet. I'm not sure about the history. They're both very young, so they don't really know how to express themselves particularly well, so they express themselves in quite random ways. There's a lot of dancing. They go to swimming pools late at night and dive in. They're just going with the flow, really, and they're very sexual. They're very touchy-feely with each other without necessarily being explicit. Maybe that's the Frenchness of the film.
Romantic?
Kind of romantic, but again, like I say, kind of more real than romantic, because they fall out over the the violence that's happening in Iran, because he doesn't really know how to deal with it because he's so young. And she, you know, she is obviously frustrated because her friends, she's worried at one point that one of her friends has died, that she's seen a video of her friend dying, and she doesn't know if it is or not. And so they watch it together, and obviously he doesn't know because he doesn't know her friends. But in the end, they learn to kind of express themselves in a, even vocally, they go on the roofs and shout Allah Akbar, like they've been doing in Iran, God is great. And it's a slightly bizarre, it's just a slightly bizarre film, really. It just does weird stuff like that.
Well, the director is David Dusa, and yes. This is his first feature debut. He's worked in shorts before. Did you think, technically, as how it looked, did you see that amateurness?
No, it was, well, definitely, not amateur, but it was definitely experimental. He was definitely trying new things. He was definitely trying modern things. It occasionally lacked a coherency, and it jumped all over the place a bit. But he was certainly, he had an interesting story to tell, and he didn't ever really overly politicise the point. He just presented reality, you know, kind of the documentary reality of that's on YouTube, and the kind of the romantic reality that they start up on Facebook and develops into, you know, in amongst Paris, which is pretty much the most romantic place you can be. It's a good film, but it's not a great film. It's an interesting film.
Okay, so that's Flowers of Evil, or
Fleurs du Mal.
Fleurs du Mal, okay. And I'm just going to play a little song, begging you for a little song. Here it is. Bringing that up because we just like putting in random pop music by little female vocalists or hits from 2009. But Mercy, 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 Joe, tell us about Patagonia.
Yeah, Patagonia is a second film I watched, directed by Mark Evans. And obviously the reason you played that song is because Duffy, the pop star who you may also know from Diet Coke adverts, is in the film. She doesn't have a big part, but she does kind of come in towards the end of the film and have an interesting part. Patagonia is a colony in Argentina of Welsh people, of Welsh cowboys.
Oh, wow.
Where the Welsh left Wales and landed in South America and set up a community. It really happened. It's a slightly bizarre turn of events, and, you know, and confuses Welsh people, confuses Argentinians, but here it is. So we travel to Patagonia, the film does, and we meet a Welsh cowboy played by Matthew Rhys, and he is showing around a photographer and a photographer's girlfriend, and they take a road trip to photograph churches in Patagonia, while simultaneously an old woman called Keres has left Patagonia, her eyes are fading her, to go to Wales to find the farm that she was essentially conceived on, although she was born in Patagonia, so she just speaks Spanish. And she goes on a road trip with young Alejandro, who is her neighbour, and they're looking for this farm in Wales. So there's a road trip featuring Welsh people in Patagonia, and there's a road trip in Wales featuring people from Patagonia. So there's a slightly bizarre
contrast. Parallel.
It's two languages, two cultures, but kind of linked in a bizarre way. There's a lot of confusion over language. There's a lot of tension, particularly in Patagonia, where the Welsh cowboy is hitting on the photographer's girlfriend, and in fact, you know, the photographer gets more and more frustrated with that, and eventually they're basically lost in these incredible landscapes, these mountains, these deserts. They get lost in them.
And, so do they speak Welsh?
Yes, yeah, they speak Welsh the whole time. There's almost no English in it. And Duffy speaks Welsh. Duffy comes in. She's in North Wales in the Welsh road trip. She is encountered by this old Spanish woman on this caravan park, and the young neighbour, and that's where he meets her. And it's a kind of a peculiar relationship. I mean, you know, again, it's a peculiar film because this is such an unusual situation. But yeah, it's a really interesting to compare the two, the lush greenery of Wales. In fact, oddly enough, they turn up in Aberystwyth for about 15 seconds.
Oh, wow, cool.
So you see Aberystwyth, which is obviously special to us.
Diolch yn fawr, yes. Patagonia, yeah. For making a trip there.
Yes.
But, I mean, the scenery, I mean, the Welsh, you know, countryside, I guess.
Yeah.
But the Welsh mountains, and it's just absolutely beautiful. I mean,
yeah,
whenever
Patagonia is beautiful as well. That's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, very
and different. Was it shot beautifully?
It is. I mean, obviously, on the production, they went on these road trips as well, and so they kind of encountered these adventures at the same time. So, they knew they were seeing what they were shooting, and they were, enjoying that as we viewers enjoy it, so to speak. You know, we went on the journey with them, with the characters, but, in a sense, there's a kind of a documentary feel to it, even though it's a fiction film, and there's some dramatic tension inserted because the trying to find the farm and the photographer's losing his girlfriend, grip on his girlfriend, and that kind of stuff. It's just, it's a bit, it's quite long and it jumps around all over the place. It cuts between the two stories, creating links between them and demonstrating the difference between, Spanish and Welsh as well. But it draws you in to it's a journey of self-discovery.
Okay.
For all the people involved, even the people who don't expect it to be.
Okay, so would you say there was a certain self-discovery of, love for the film? Did you like it?
It was all right, yeah. It's a complicated one to describe, but you really, if you have a connection to Wales, then I think certainly you will be engaged by it, because it is very well, and small films like this that essentially celebrate Wales and its slight weirdness with this link with Argentina, we'll enjoy it, because, and there's fun to be had. This old woman who's losing her eyesight, wandering through Wales and encountering the Welsh people that we know so well, the nice Welsh people, the not-so-nice Welsh people. There's humour in that, and there's drama in the love triangle in Patagonia as it all falls apart.
So, to finish, I saw a film a while ago called One Week, starring Joshua Jackson, which I felt was like a love story for Canada. It was like saying how beautiful Canada was. I mean, you just saw Canada.
Sponsored by the tourist board.
Yeah, exactly. Would you say that's the same about this or not?
And certainly there's a celebration of Wales. The director, Mark Evans, is Welsh. Duffy, this is the first film she's chosen to star in, and, she's celebrating her Welshness, her ability to speak Welsh. There is a celebration of Wales, but there's a celebration of the quirkiness of the link to Patagonia, and that's kind of the interest. It doesn't necessarily say come and visit Wales, it just says this is Wales, and there are some dark points to Wales as well, and it's not afraid to explore those.
Right, well, this is Wales, Patagonia.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so now we've got the news. So we're going to start off with some sad news.
Sad news, but also, we can be sad, but we can also laugh.
You'd better tell the captain we've got to land as soon as we can. This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now. Tell the captain I must speak to him.
Certainly.
Leslie Nielsen has died, but he's left with some very funny clips, hasn't he, Simon?
He sure has. He's star of Airplane, star of all the Naked Gun films, Spy Hard, Scary Movie 3 and 4, but we won't go into those ones.
Yeah, In later life, the parodies, they just became silly. Superhero movie, Stan Helsing, not good enough. But we'll always remember Airplane, which was actually the film that broke him out as a comedy actor. Before that, he was a pretty serious dude.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
And actually, the seriousness is what made him so funny. Wouldn't you agree, Simon?
I completely agree. I mean, he's so funny. I just think it's such a sad loss. But, he was 84. So, he was getting on. So
good innings and some great films.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I have a message for you from Vincent Ludwig.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Don't fire the gun while you're talking!
Somebody else famous in particular for one great film, Irvin Kershner, director of The Empire Strikes Back. George Lucas hired him to do the second one, and for many people, it's the best one, except for George Lucas, who doesn't like it.
Yeah, and yeah, it's funny, who's it, he, his best known stretch of films are now, like, between, what is it, The Empire Strikes Back, and he also directed Never Say Never Again, which was the unofficial
the kind of
James...
fake Bond, so, you know, it's a difficult one.
Yeah, and he snuck Sean Connery back when Sean Connery's getting on a bit.
Yeah, so. He did Robocop 2.
Yeah, that's not bad. Have you seen Robocop 2?
No.
But nevertheless, you know, Irvin Kershner. It's funny because everybody keeps going on about Star Wars and they go Star Wars Lucas automatically. But obviously, Irvin Kershner did Empire Strikes Back.
And he's responsible for the best line in that, apparently, when Leia says, "I love you," to Han Solo, and he says, "I know." Apparently, that's the best line in the franchise.
I would disagree. Okay. I would assume it's Luke. I'm your father.
Well, that's a shocking line. But,
yeah, but that's a pretty know, big, that's an important big, line.
But isn't that in The Empire Strikes Back as well?
Or yeah, maybe.
So Kershner is responsible for all this malarkey.
May the Force be with you.
Okay.
That's another one.
You are doing,
they're both better
doing
than
an
that
amazing,
line.
An amazing Darth Vader impression
well,
there.
I try.
Okay, the next news story is Mark Ruffalo having a bit of a tricky time at the moment. He's been added to the terrorism watch list.
Okay, so this is reported from The Guardian, where apparently Mark Ruffalo attracted the attention of the Pennsylvania's Office of Homeland Security when he organised screenings for Gasland. Now, Gasland is done very well. It actually won the special jury prize at the Sundance Film Festival, but Mark Ruffalo, he was concerned about the impact of drilling on water supplies. But yeah,
and apparently that makes you a terrorist.
Well, this is it. Maybe the Hulk himself is in fact a terrorist.
Yeah,
so,
no, the Hulk is a terrorist, but Mark Ruffalo, the actor, is not a terrorist.
Well,
if
I see him around, I'll be like, you know what I mean? Get out of here. You know,
take
your jacket off. Let's just double check you're not wearing any kind of bombs.
Okay. Well, you tell him
concerned.
That, and I'll tell you the host for this year's Oscars, Anne Hathaway and James Franco, no less. That's blooming exciting. That's pretty young, to
this
be honest.
This is nuts.
They had Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin last year, the old classic Hollywood gagmeisters, and now they've got these hot young things. I mean, they've really sexed it up a bit. Random or?
Well,
I mean, Anne Hathaway did the dancing with the Hugh Jackman a couple of years ago, so.
Yeah.
She can dance and sing, that's fine.
But I just kind of feel like, you know, the two of them are just like, I mean, who are they really? I mean, Hugh Jackman even was a bit of a stretch, but then, you know, he had established himself to some extent.
He's a musical star.
Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin have been around for a couple of decades, I guess.
I mean, the interesting thing here is that James Franco is almost definitely going to be nominated for Best Actor for 127 Hours, so there's going to be a slight confusion. Already people are saying he's going to be host, he's not going to win Best Actor. That is a negative mark on his host. Hopes of winning Best Actor. And Anne Hathaway, will she get nominated? We just don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
I think it's just going to be. I think it's a weird pick, and I don't think it will look very good.
I'm excited about it. I'm also excited about the Wachowskis Cloud Atlas. We're waiting to see about that. Halle Berry, she's been chatting about it. What's she saying?
Well, Halle Berry has said. She said she's going to do a movie in the summer with the Wachowskis. A really interesting movie that is sort of like what they did for The Matrix. They have another really amazing idea that's sort of going to stretch our brains even further. And so I'm really excited about that. And that's probably going to be in the summer. And that's with Tom Hanks and Natalie Portman.
That's a bloody good cast, because James McAvoy and Ian McKellen also linked to that. So if it happens, it's impressive. But the Wachowskis, one of them is becoming a woman or may already be a woman. They have been under the radar for a while now. Maybe they're going to explode back onto the radar in spectacular fashion.
You know, Tom Hanks, he's always involved with these really, like, great directors. I always feel like Tom Hanks just goes up to people and goes, "So I want to be in one of your films." And they're like, okay, yeah, sure. And they just, like, confirm it. And they write a film kind of around Tom Hanks. I mean, you got Sam Mendes and Road to Perdition, which I thought Tom Hanks was really badly cast there. But the fact of the matter is, they were like, "Oh, yeah, put him in anyway." You know, and it's happened in multiple films, I'm sure.
Too many times to remember. Something else that's happened too many times is 3D, and now we're learning that The Hobbit is going to be shot in 3D. How do you feel about that?
Oh, if anything, I think this is setting up. You know what they're going to do? What are they going to re-release? In 3D.
Lord of the Rings.
Of course. They're going to just re-release
it. Then they've got to retrofit it.
Of course, and they'll do it.
I think it's too dark to retrofit. At least they are shooting the Hobbit in 3D. If it works, it works. Personally, I'd rather be punched in the face by a short man.
But it's worth bearing in mind, obviously, that Peter Jackson is working on Tintin, which is going to be, that's motion capture. That's going to be in 3D. So Peter Jackson will know his 3D.
He is at the head of technology. He is inventing new technologies. Him and James.
He's not
Cameron.
Inventing new technology. No, 3D's already there, isn't
he's
it?
He's just using new technology.
He's just using new technology.
Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. Wow.
I think. I mean, that's pretty much all the news.
That's a lot of news. We've hinted at the Oscars there. We are going to build up to some Oscars buzz. We've got some end of the year stuff that will come in the next few weeks. So listen out for that. But for now, that's all the news from this week.
Yeah, surely you can't be serious.
I am. And stop calling me Shirley.
Oh.
Hello, and now it's time for our social media update, Simon, isn't it? We've got some feedback on various sites.
Can we stop with the social use of the social media social network?
Why? What's wrong with that?
Because it feels like it's very, like, you know, data, you know, it's like a job title.
It's just an umbrella term, Simon.
Feedback.
If you're not comfortable with it, then...
Feedback,
you know,
contact, interactivity.
I'm going to continue to use it, because I'm modern.
Well, I'm going to go, interactivity! That's good.
Yeah, really good. Particularly when you say it like that. What's our blog of the week?
Okay, the blog which I have recently found out about, The 1001 Movies to See Before You Die book by Stephen J. Schneider.
Yeah.
Nice.
Forward by Jason Solomons.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And this book...
It's a great book.
It's a great book. Yeah.
It's bedtime reading.
And I'm trying to watch them all over my life.
Tick those boxes.
Before I die.
What will you do if you die without having seen all 1001?
I reckon...
What will you do?
Is it St. Peter at the gates?
Won't let you in.
No, he'll be unhappy. But the point is that when I'm with this, there's a club which I was a part of whereby I was watching them with other people and we'd all comment and write reviews and it would all be put together. And it stopped for a while, but it's come back again.
Brilliant.
And it's run now, well, I think it's run partly by Film Squish. Now,
good
this
name.
Is a website called www.filmsquish.com.
There will be a link on our website.
Yeah, and I've never seen this website before, but it is bloody, bloody good. I mean, it's got everything. This guy, I don't know how he even has a job or a family, because his website just seems to cover every single part of film which you'd want to do.
Brilliant.
So I really enjoy this website, and I'm going to really
recommend it.
Recommend it indeed. And obviously recommend the 1001 Film Club, which he does on it. And if you're a blogger, get involved.
Watch those films. What was the film you just did as part of that?
A Trip to the Moon.
Yes.
Georges Méliès. One of the
first films.
Yeah, 1902 classic.
Yeah.
And you can... If you go to our website, we've actually got the entire film on there, because it's only like 10 minutes long.
10 minutes.
On YouTube.
You could do it in your lunch break.
Exactly.
Do it at work while the snow's falling. Who is, Simon, our Twitterer of the week? Who are we enjoying this week?
Mr. Graham Lineham.
Yeah, Lineham.
Lineham.
Writer of Father Ted, and more recently The It Crowd. He's just a fun guy to follow. It's at GLINNER.
Glinner.
Glinner. Give him a try. He tweets links, he tweets funny stuff. And he's always, appealing for stuff because, he understands social media in a way that a lot of comedy writers don't.
He's also got a blog as well called whythatsdelightful.wordpress.com.
Brilliant.
But, that's there to check out.
Who's our Facebook user of the week? I know, Simon, you've been updating the Facebook with a little Disney debate.
Yeah.
Why debate Disney? Just enjoy it. That's
yeah, because Lion King is my favourite, like, categorically favourite Disney
film. Love the Lions.
Aladdin's a close second. Beauty and the Beast I haven't watched recently enough to recall.
No.
I know,
watch
I remember I liked it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, be your guest, be your guest.
Don't have to sing. Don't have to
Great.
Sing.
Great. And shockingly.
Shocking.
Nick Jobe put Lion King at number 4.
Out of 5. Pocahontas was number 5. Everybody agrees Pocahontas is the worst.
Well, it's rubbish.
Get on Facebook and let's see what other people think.
Lion King.
I'm sure there are people who don't like the Lion
incredible.
King.
Incredible. Lion King is incredible. Everything from the wildebeest storming down.
That is
and
amazing.
And Scar, when he's there going, long live the king, and he just throws him off. and he goes, "Rah!" You're like, "Oh my god!" And hyenas, Whoopi Goldberg, player, amazing.
Right, you're not going to sing for us. It seemed like you wanted to sing.
I could sing.
No, no. Let's move on. Let's move on to the London Top Five. And thank you very much, Time Out. You have updated your London Top Five. So this is the London Top Five. London Top Five. Here it comes. Number five.
Hornet's Nest. Oh no, the girl who kicked the hornet's nest.
It's, you know, you could refer to it as the hornet's nest, because that's pretty, you know, the girl who, that's taken as given,
yeah,
to the hornet's nest.
Like Harry Potter and the...
It may as well just be Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, so...
Or A, Deathly
five,
Hallows A.
Hornet's Nest.
Yeah, happy about that?
Yeah, well, yeah.
We really didn't like those first two, so, you know,
I'm not going to
see the third one. That, you know,
are
I'm
you not?
Saying. I can't think of a reason. If it suddenly strikes me, if the impulse strikes me, I might do, but I really am. I'm actually looking forward to the American remake, and you know I'm anti-remakes, I'm anti-Let Me In for that very reason, but in this case, they messed up on the Swedish versions. I want to see the remake.
I like the first one. The second one wasn't so good, and I know I got to watch the third one. So hold your horses. We might cover it on a podcast soon enough. But the point is that, you know,
are you going to watch the third one?
I have to really. I can't watch the first two and just not watch the third one.
Okay,
let's get a bit.
That's a decision I can make.
A bit of resolution would be nice.
I've got the resolution because I read the book.
Ah, well then, literary scholar. Number four, London Boulevard.
Yeah. Colin Farrell, he's doing a fine Cockney accent, but then I guess Ray Winston turns up and does a proper Cockney accent, and he's like, "Oh yeah, that's fine, Colin Farrell, but, you know, Ray Winston is the king of that, so don't put yourself up against him." That's what I'd say.
But then, Keira Knightley comes around. Keira Knightley.
It does have...
Hello.
It's almost as bad as you sing. The thing about Keira Knightley is she does have the worst line in this trailer when she says, "What would you do if I fell in love with you?" I'm waiting for a woman to say that to me. What would you do if I fell in love with you?
Are you asking me? This is awkward. Jesus.
Has a woman ever said that to you?
A woman's never said that to
me. That's a bad line. I don't think that happens in real life.
I think we'll discuss a similar kind of, you know, women, you know, throwing themselves at men situation later on in the trailers. So hold back, because there's something else.
Number three is based on a real story. It's Unstoppable, and it's done very well.
I know it's based on a true story. Have you looked at the true story?
No.
Okay, Tony Scott's Unstoppable, put it this way, is about, like, a train, and I quote...
It's unstoppable.
And I quote, "It's like a missile." Yeah, and it's going to plow over everyone, kill them all.
Kill a million people.
And, you know, so apparently, put it this way, the actual true story is based upon... the train wasn't going so fast.
Tony Scott added some MPH.
Yeah. So the inspired by true events, we're talking about, you know, gratuitously expanded on a very minor story, and chances are the only inspired by a true story is just for the people who, for some inexplicable reason, think that true stories are better films.
Well, he, of course, made Domino, which was based on a true story, but I Am a Bounty Hunter, with the old Bounty Hunter Keira Knightley, as
true.
We've already discussed. He loves true stories, but he loves ramping them up into your face.
Into your face, indeed.
Yeah, yeah. Number two is The American.
Clooney, Corbin, Italian woman.
Not you two.
No, not you two. Tell us more.
Well, I've seen it. I saw it today. I wasn't at work because of the snow. I will talk about it more next week. Suffice to say, you know, I will talk about it more next week.
Okay, but I, very grey palette.
Well,
very blue.
You'd be surprised.
Palette, maybe.
Just because Clooney's hair is grey doesn't mean the whole film is grey. Number one is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part One. We will, of course, cover this in future weeks. Shortly, we've got Simon's review.
Next week.
Yes. Shortly we've got Simon's review of 5 and 6, so we're almost there. There's no real point in talking about Harry Potter at the moment, because we will talk about it more. It will be at number one for probably about 12 years, would you say?
Yeah, maybe.
I would say it's going to be at number one.
Days when there was, you know, films in the chart or were in the cinema for like a long period of time? Remember that?
Yeah.
I remember Jurassic Park was there for like a year.
Wow.
But I remember that. It was always there. It was like you were gagging for it to be released on DVD or video. And you were desperate for it to be on television. It just never was. But now it's like Harry Potter is probably the only... It's going to be there for the longest period, you know what I mean? While loads of other films are going to come and go within like 3 weeks.
Brilliant.
It's ridiculous.
Okay. I think that was just you, Simon. That was just you gagging to see the old Jurassic... You know, you particularly personal
true,
to you, isn't
true,
it?
True,
you
true.
Feel particularly, you know...
Okay,
wow, good
that
sound
was
effects
my roar.
As well. So singing, sound effects, and Keira Knightley impressions. Simon.
Oh, yes.
You are headed for the big time.
Tell me your...
Someone else who's headed for the big time is Brad Pitt. He is now in animated films. Brilliant. Megamind, new release. You going to go and see it?
This is Joe's new release of the week. Is it?
It's a pretty awful week for new releases, so I'm scraping the barrel, but I am, you know, the point of interest is the fact that Brad Pitt and Will Ferrell are voicing characters. That's kind of cool. Brad Pitt voicing a character in a cartoon, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's very cool.
Tina Fey's in it. She's voicing a character as well.
Tina Fey always voices cartoons, doesn't she?
Shut up.
Wasn't she?
Stop slagging off Tina Fey.
I'm just saying, it's just
She did one of the English voices in Ponyo, but that's not important right now.
There we go.
Okay, she probably does, but she's got a great voice.
So. Well, I mean,
unlike you, what are you going to bring it on? You going to voice a cartoon?
Well, I'll tell you, on the advertising campaign, it seems to be saying Megamind is like going to change comic book movies forever.
No, it's not.
But that's a lie.
That is a lie. It's
a dirty lie.
So I don't know. I guess you could compare it to Despicable Me. Is it going to be better than that? I'm probably not going to see either. Simon, what's your new release?
I've chosen Gareth Edwards' Monsters. This is a new. It's a British production, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's actually set in America, or set in Mexico, even. And it's. I managed to see it last week. I will be discussing that next week as well. So
hopefully, I will have seen it by then, and there will be a debate.
So you know already. You know pretty much what we're going to be talking about next week. A chock-a-block week of new releases. So that's really exciting.
I'm bloody excited.
But yeah, suffice to say, it's got some great... It's worth seeing, put it that way. Definitely hunt it out. Support the independent cinema. And the fact of the matter is, this is independent cinema a cut above the rest. Really very good. But we'll get more into detail about that next week.
Someone else who is considered to be a cut above the rest, but who I wouldn't say is a cut above the rest, is Justin Bieber. He's got a film coming out. We've seen a trailer. The film is Justin Bieber, Never Say Never. It's pretty clear Justin Bieber's in this. I don't know who Justin Bieber is, but I'm pretty sure he's Justin Bieber.
Yeah, this is
Who is Justin Bieber?
Well, this is my trailer choice.
Yeah.
There's only a few trailers this week. But Justin Bieber is apparently the most twittered person, almost.
Are you? I mean, you've chosen
like
this trailer. Is it because you're damp with anticipation at the thought of seeing Justin Bieber in mind-blowing 3D? Are you excited, Simon? Are you screaming girl, or are you actually quite angry? I see anger.
There was a time when you'd actually generally be.
This is a story.
We would be, you know, you'd be a part of some of the big trends. You'd be aware of to some extent. I have no idea who Justin Bieber. I don't know a song which he's done.
Oh,
and
I know
yet,
a song.
I'm seeing him in this trailer, you know what I mean, with his glasses and pointing to the screen, which obviously isn't in 3D on a laptop, so it's ineffective there.
But the point Justin Bieber, ineffective.
Yeah, indeed. But the point
I think
is,
he's pretty effective. I think he's made a lot of money, actually.
Well, nevertheless, you know, and then he's posing like Michael Jackson. Slander.
Oh.
Blasphemy.
Are you going to sue him?
Justin Bieber pretending to be Michael Jackson is a joke.
He's not black. Oh, but neither is Michael Jackson.
Point is that Usher was there, and Usher,
Usher is Justin Bieber's mentor. That's why he signed him to his record label.
That is ridiculous.
Okay.
I mean, Usher, you know, I credit to Usher. Usher was like, I thought was a willing a person who could be...
Trusted.
Take a part of Michael Jackson and carry it on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He clearly was inspired.
He still can.
He should.
He has.
But if he is in any way implying that Justin Bieber, the little cute little, I don't know what he is.
Rugrat?
Dickhead. You know what I mean?
That's cold.
Usher, no. I say, support someone else. Because he is not it. He is not the future. Have him posing there with his fists clenched, Michael Jackson style history, 1995.
Classic.
Not going to happen. I'm not happy about it at all.
Okay, I can see you're not happy, Simon. I have to tell you, you have been outvoted on this. He did just win Artist of the Year at the American Music Awards, so essentially Justin Bieber is the next big thing. I'm sorry. Don't cry. Instead, watch the Everyday trailer, a film starring Liev Schreiber.
This is your trailer of choice.
It is bad. Liev Schreiber is a family man, but he's frustrated. His marriage is rubbish. His kids don't get him. His wife is, you know, burning dinner. His job is annoying. Eddie Izzard is his boss and asks inappropriate questions. Ha ha! So
woe is he!
A
tough life.
I tell you what, the only point of interest in this trailer was when Carla Gugino turned up in her swimming costume, and I was like, holy moly, looking good, yeah? Looking good?
She was looking very good.
She was looking mighty fine, and that was the middle of the trailer, the peak of the interest. I'm guessing it's going to happen about in the middle of the film.
Yeah.
And from then on, it's all downhill again. So frankly, watch this film if you want a 2-minute shot of Carla Gugino in a swimsuit.
Watch the trailer.
Well, you only get 10 seconds then.
Yeah,
you want
at least 3 minutes. But I'm just saying that this is something which
rude.
Is, you know,
it's
dirty.
Not good.
All I'm saying is, you know, what we brought up in London Boulevard, and again, apparently, in these worlds of whatever, women just, you know, she just walks out like wearing a swimming costume, like, hey, let's go swimming. Look, women, I've never been in this situation.
No, you haven't, have you?
No, and I'll tell you what, if a woman just suddenly threw that upon me, I'd be really like, oh my god, oh my, what are you doing? This is awkward. You know what I mean? This is awkward. But Lee Schreiber seems to be like, hey, let's go swimming. I'll go swimming. All right, I'll take my clothes off. And inevitably, she is just throwing herself at him. Ridiculous.
He is massively good looking, don't you think?
I thought
he's got a beard. Does that make him good looking?
Well, he just reminds me of
no George Clooney.
His Wolverine days, or brother of Wolverine.
Sabretooth,
there it is.
We're bringing up bad memories. So yeah. let's leave it there. And
okay.
After this break, it will be Harry Potter 5 and 6.
I'll get you, Potter.
Okay, so Simon, your films this week, your Potterthon has continued. And first off, we've got Harry Potter and...
Order of the Phoenix.
That is the fifth film?
This is the fifth film. I think, we'll just point out now, I was listening to the podcast we released, and I was thinking, we're going to give away spoilers now. I don't think, from the previous four films...
By the time you got to this film, you're pretty much committed to Harry Potter, aren't you? So you know all about this.
But we were trying to be all, like, spoiler-free. And I think, you know, I can't start talking about the fifth film in the series.
People will be, you know, stuff will have happened that will impact. We know, Simon, just tell us.
Okay, so I mean,
you're spoiling it for me because I haven't seen or read them, so, you know. But do it.
Okay.
I don't care.
Well, the Order of the Phoenix, what the Order of the Phoenix is basically the group of people who originally, back in the day when Voldemort first came around, you know, bound together and, you know, basically fought him. Potter's parents were in it.
The good guys.
Yeah, yeah. Longbottom, he was in it. His Longbottom's parents.
Right, okay.
And, you know, all you know, Weasleys were in it. You know, Snape was not in it. He was somebody who was a Death Eater, but he changed sides, you see. But the point is that, like, towards the end, that's why he's seen as a good guy. But the point is that in order of the Phoenix, it's about exploring that. But I think, again, like we talked about the different themes. Can you remember the themes of the other ones, which I said?
Identity
was a big issue generally.
Yeah.
But we had
in
the
life.
Celebrity was kind of all
yeah.
Pride in Goblet of Fire.
Loss,
yeah. Order of the Phoenix is about fear.
Ah.
Okay, this is about your fear of failure.
Harry's afraid.
He is afraid. He's got a fear of failure himself, a fear of death and defeat, a fear of the demons, a fear of his own state of mind. It's like this whole sense of, like, he can't trust anyone. And this is in a film when we're talking about a group of people who he should be able to put trust in. But if anything, he feels more alone than he has ever felt before.
Okay.
And this is kind of the setup we've got. You know, what's really good about this, now David Yates is the director, and prior to Order of the Phoenix...
Not done much, really, had he?
Not really, no. He directed the miniseries of State of Play, and he'd done a film called The Girl in the Cafe.
I think that was written by Richard Curtis, starring Bill Nighy.
There we go. But they were very small scale. They were both,
yeah.
They're all
and
TV.
Here he is, bloody taking on the last four Harry Potter films. Well done, David Yates.
Well, I mean...
Must have aced that job interview.
That's exactly it. And one thing which is clear is that he likes his London. Because in this
yeah.
film, especially in Order
don't
of Phoenix,
we all?
You see lots of London, really great stuff, right in central London, Westminster, and you see those, Aldgate, all
yeah.
that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
That's a really, really great thing as well. Now, this is where another thing which I found really interesting in Order of the Phoenix, and I'm trying to bring something new to the table. I don't
do
want to.
What's
I don't want to just
new...
be talking about the story.
Okay.
I want to try and bring.
What's your new thing? Tell us.
Okay, the media.
Yeah.
Okay? The whole thing about Order of the Phoenix is that they don't believe... In Goblet of the Fire, remember I said at the end of Goblet of Fire, Voldemort returned.
Mm.
In Order of the Phoenix, nobody believes Harry or Dumbledore that Voldemort has returned.
Right.
Everybody thinks they're bullshitting.
Right.
Everybody, you know, they're like, oh, Potter, oh, whatever, come on, he's not evil. And the thing is that the media... Okay, the Daily Prophet. The people behind that, they turn around, they're like, you know, yeah, it's clearly lies. And they're basically saying that it's all untrue as well, and they're basically saying that Dumbledore and Harry Potter are liars as well. So, we have this whole fear thing, a connection to media, kind of purporting fear. Is that the right word?
Yeah,
purporting
fear. Go for it.
You know, making fear into the public conscience, everybody feeling scary, and if you think about, or feeling scared, can you think about a similar situation we've had in our recent years?
Are you talking about the war in Iraq? Or?
Boom!
Right.
Don't you think?
Okay. You're linking Harry Potter to the war on Iraq.
Exactly.
Wow, well done. That is new to the table.
So, yeah, so we're talking about fear. We're talking about people getting scared of things which are there when they're... Or people saying that things are not there when they are, things which you should worry about and that type of thing, and Harry himself being all fearful. So I think... I think there's a tenuous link there. But I think, you know... As each film has those themes, that's what's really, really good about it. I mean, the scale of this story is a lot bigger than any of the other ones, in that now we're talking about the Order of the Phoenix, all that clan, versus the Death Eaters and Voldemort.
Yeah.
And that is how big we're talking. And
it's a big deal.
And you get an introduction of Bellatrix, who's played by Helena Bonham Carter,
right.
Who is just nuts.
She is nuts.
And so she is somebody who's obviously a Death Eater.
Yeah.
And you see her and how she's ruined and everything. And another underlying thing is Professor Umbridge. Have you heard of this?
No.
Imelda Staunton plays this character.
Okay.
And she's this all kind of archaic, old teacher woman.
Right.
You know what I mean? And she's really strict and really stern, very old attitude towards education. And I find this really interesting as a teacher.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good opportunity.
Personally relatable to you.
Yeah. And now this is where I think it's a good point to talk about the teaching in Harry Potter.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, across the
Don't
franchise.
Spend too long,
no, I'm not going to take too long, but I just like to point out
that. Is this
that
how you'd like to teach people?
No. My point is that I'll tell you one thing, there's so many things about teaching which I'm seeing is done incorrectly.
Really?
Yeah.
You're saying Hogwarts isn't like a normal school?
No, it's not like a normal school. For one, they generally teach them, you know, I reckon they could cram more learning in, if I'm honest.
Right.
So basically when we're...
They don't learn enough.
No, they don't learn enough. And I think when we're talking about using their wand, they just keep reciting the same thing again and again and again. That's, you know... Why not do something different and try and link it towards some bigger scheme? You know what I mean? And link it maybe
why
with...
Why not?
Or maybe talk about how they can apply those skills to modern society.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm going?
Are you applying for a job?
Well, I'm just saying Hogwarts needs to get better, I think, at its teaching.
Okay.
So though I don't agree with Professor Umbridge, who's very strict and not very nice, she is all, you know, the fact of the matter is that... You know,
a middle ground, a compromise.
Let's be honest, the lessons taught... are not particularly, you know what I mean, they're quite simplistic lessons. I mean, where was that one with the teacher who was telling them, who played by David Thewlis, who was telling him to kind of turn this demon in a box into something, and they all just went up to the box and thought about something which they're afraid of and then turned it into something funny, and they all just do it. And I'm trying to think, you know, I'm thinking, well, when one's doing it, the rest of them, what are they learning? Nothing, because they're all in the line. Bad teaching.
That's what
I'm just saying. There could be better teachers in Hogwarts. But nevertheless, Harry in this film becomes a teacher.
Good.
And he's a great teacher.
Great.
And when we see him...
That's important.
Yeah, and when we see him teach, you see everybody learning.
Good.
Everybody learns together.
That's the way it needs to be.
That's what teaching is all about. So
okay.
I think in this film, none of the other teachers, McGonagall, Snape, all of them are bad teachers compared to Harry Potter. Check out him teaching in Order of the Phoenix and you'll see a good
use
teacher.
Use that in your everyday life now, that kind of teaching. Harry Potter, what's the next one on the agenda, Simon? The sixth one, you might say.
Okay, this one I'd never seen before until I saw it just seen it. Never seen it before until
What's
I saw
it called?
This. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Who is the Half-Blood Prince?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, right.
That's like the end of the film. Do you want to know?
No.
Well, I can tell you.
Okay.
Snape.
Right.
Actually. But the assumption is throughout the entire film you're thinking that it's Voldemort.
Right.
So you're there thinking, oh, who is it? Now, again, this is like the setup of the world now, at the end of the last one, they've established Voldemort does exist, now everybody believes us. So now we know that evil is present in society. Voldemort and the Death Eaters, they're on the loose. Bellatrix and co, they're all signing up more Death Eaters to support the cause, Draco. And very early on, it's, you know, right, you know, Snape is like... linked to them again. Now, you still question what he's really standing by, but the point is that he's back and joined them again. Now, again, we're talking about a focus and a theme. What is the theme?
I don't know, Simon. You tell me.
It is about trust or protection.
Right.
Dumbledore protects Harry Potter. Draco is protected in this film specifically by Snape, and Hogwarts ultimately protects the students, and that's what's being threatened at this point. We're thinking, oh my god, what's going to happen now? Okay, where all these people who are protecting others are being taken down, and there's certain people who are taken down who people never expected to be taken down, but they sure are. And you know, also you have the romance between Ron and Hermione that hots up as both of them are becoming aware of their emotions. Potter's falling in love as well with a girl.
Oh great, okay, so it's a romantic film.
Yeah, well this
it's
is
kind of like a romance.
Well, they never really, I mean, they touch upon Potter fancying Cho in the earlier ones, but then this one
he moves on like
he's a player.
Dog
he
on
a
hit.
Dirty player. But Harry Potter then finds love in Ginny Weasley, Ron's younger sister.
Ooh.
Dirty. But the point is that he protected Ginny in Chamber of Secrets. And there's lots of links in this one to specifically the Chamber of Secrets.
Well
in
done.
That, remember I told you about Tom Riddle?
Yeah.
And that he was fought in that other one. That's because when Voldemort kills people, when you kill people, yeah, you do a trick, an illegal wizard trick, a manoeuvre, whereby you can actually split yourself apart, a spirit, in different ways. Hence, you had Tom Riddle in the second Harry Potter, and you had Voldemort's spirit as well. Every single time you kill someone, because
it's a complicated business.
Yeah, it rips your spirit apart. Now, Voldemort, he's a serial killer. So he's ripped himself apart a fair few times.
Right.
Which means there's lots of him around, to some extent, and they all are placed within objects.
Right.
So Tom Riddle in Chamber of Secrets, he's placed within a book, and he, you know, that another part of Voldemort's spirit was placed within a ring, etc., etc. And there's all these different things. That means that Voldemort can never be killed. So they have to get all of these things to kill him.
Right.
Do you understand?
Yes.
So with that in mind, we have this huge task where they're trying to actually find all these different pieces. Now, it's really scary. There's lots of references to horror. You have zombies in the water, like really disgusting things. It even reminded me of some of the creatures in The Road. Remember
Yikes.
When he goes in the
yeah.
road when they're going out? Those kind of creatures, that's what we're talking about. You've got one bit where they're running through the grass, which
okay.
reminds me of Signs. Or
yeah.
The Lost World, if we want to go there. But The Signs, more importantly, and that type of thing. And you've got one bit where the girls are hovering in the sky, almost like The Exorcist, or something like that. And it's really quite, you know, so these horrific images.
These are references that are good, golden, but also almost X-rated.
Well, you know, it's very deep red, lots of shadow. If I'm going to talk about an artist, I'm going to bring to play Caravaggio, where he's
okay.
got like that really dark, dark use of shadow.
Yep.
And it's surprising, you know, we talk about, without going on about it again too much, getting darker, all that crap. Point is that this is, like, seriously, half the stuff is in shadow.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a great bit
of... Isn't that a bit annoying?
Well, yeah, but then it's the mood is really,
oh,
it
okay.
works. I mean, towards the end, there's one bit where there's a fire in the background of Snape as he stands there, and it's just really like deep, kind of deep black, which is just like, and with that red and the fire in the background, it, like I said, Caravaggio comes to mind, and that kind of Baroque use of colour, really
right,
dark shadows,
yeah,
like
big
I was
time,
saying.
Big time.
Once we're interested, Ralph Fiennes isn't in this one at all, which is
oh,
a shame, because
okay,
obviously
shame.
He's still there, Voldemort's still around, you just don't see him.
Yeah.
But he's around there somewhere.
He is a presence.
But yeah, now I'm set up and I'm ready for...
You're ready for the seventh, that's going to happen.
Damn right
I mean, you're very positive about all these first six films.
They're
still
eight.
Haven't convinced me, but you are loving
what
it.
What do you need to convince you?
I don't
Come
know.
On.
Money?
I'm not going to give you money to watch them.
Okay.
What do you want in a good film?
Stuff.
What?
You know, it's crazy to me. What a stupid question that is.
No, come on!
It's nonsense. I'm not going to watch them, but you are going to watch
They're
the seventh one.
They're bloody good.
You are going to watch the seventh
exciting.
One. There must be some problems. They're essentially children's films.
That's not... They get older. I mean,
good.
I reckon
good.
After...
They're not very good actors, are they? They're not very good, those three kids.
After Azkaban,
Daniel
adults.
Radcliffe is pretty
they're
shit.
They're late teenagers. I mean, so come on. That's
Boom.
A start.
Boom.
You should watch the Twilight films then.
I'm
to
not
prove a point.
Watch those either. Okay. Well, Simon has finished his Potterhorn.
No, I've
but
got
we'll,
one more.
He
one
will,
more.
Well, you've got two more. He will
yeah.
technically sign off on 7A next week.
Okay, I'm excited.
Well, it's pretty quiet out because it's still bloody cold. There's still flakes of snow in the air, but it doesn't seem too bad. Cars have got a light dusting, a smattering, you might say, Simon, and we've finished another classic show.
Well, indeed. So, you know, we've covered I've covered all the six Potter films.
And you're looking forward to seeing 7A. That is going to happen in the next week.
Damn right.
Good. Okay.
Maybe that might be the final straw. At that point, I might actually pay you to watch it.
Okay. Well, maybe. I will. I finished with the Brighton Film Festival now. It was a great festival. I saw three films, so excellent stuff from all over the world.
Do you recommend the Brighton Film Festival for everybody else?
Yeah, of course. Everybody, go to the Duke of York's and check it out. But, you know, I'll be back on track next week. I don't know what I'll be watching, but I'll be watching something. That'll be bloody exciting.
And you'll bring it to the table.
And you're off to Birmingham you've been to Birmingham this weekend.
I have.
I'm going to Kent. So we are on our travels.
Okay. So we will see you next week for another edition of the Simon and Joe Film Show.
Classic times.
The Simon and Joe podcast is part of screeninsight.co.uk. See you next week.